Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Play-by-play call of the day in just a moment. We just want to alert you to some news from Florida that the plane that Roy Halladay owns has crashed, and one person has been killed. They don't know who was on the plane, but it crashed in the Gulf of Mexico. One person dead. It is his plane. They've got they've matched the tail number, but the question is whether he was on the plane or not. We don't know. Still finding out, but something you should know as we move along. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Last night, Amir Abdullah and the Detroit Lions beat the Green Bay Packers.
Amir Abdullah, Packers really stacking the box. They got nine men in there. Stafford turns, toss, sweep. Abdullah trying to get the edge at the five, cuts it up to the end zone. Touchdown, Detroit Lions. Amir takes it in from 4 yards out, and the Lions are on the board again.
So, a big win for Detroit last night. The Packers are just not even remotely the same without Aaron Rodgers. You can see it. And Detroit won the game last night over Green Bay. The final was 32-17. Andrew Callahan coming up in the next half hour. If we get any news at all on the plane that crashed in the Gulf of Mexico that is owned by Roy Halladay. We didn't say he's on it, but it's owned by Roy Halladay. And they say the tail matches. We get any news on that because one person was killed, we will pass that along to you right away. And I don't know if you've seen a picture of the jet, but it is obviously it. He likes according to the story, he likes to fly it low over the water because he feels like he's flying a fighter jet. That's how quickly it moves. So we, once we get more information on that, confirmation of any kind, we will pass that along to you. But again, the pilot is dead. The plane, though, is owned by Roy Halladay. After that, we don't know. But the incident happened this afternoon out over the Gulf of Mexico, and the tail number of the aircraft does match Halladay's plane. And it's an Icon A5 light sport aircraft. Halladay, of course, pitched with the Blue Jays remarkably for 98 to 2009. Then with the Phillies, had a great run. 2010 to 2013, he won the Cy Young. In 2003 with the Jays and with the Phillies in 2010. And threw just the second no-hitter in postseason history when he no-hit the Reds. He also threw that perfect game in the regular season against the Marlins. Once we find out something definitive, we'll make sure we pass it along to you. But that happened today in the Gulf of Mexico. So, again, we'll see. All right. It's a situation where it's, you know, it's his plane, and let's be honest about it. I mean, isn't it hard to imagine somebody else was flying it unless somebody took it out for a test run, right? Strong possibility somebody could have taken it out for a test run. You just don't know. All right. Penn State Rutgers coming up on Saturday. Andrew Callahan, 24/7 Sports, who has done a great job over the years of doing tape breakdowns. Really marvelous job doing tape breakdowns. I'm also glad Andrew's done a lot of quality work covering Penn State basketball, too, and doing the same thing. We'll be talking with him in the final half hour of the show today. Looking forward to that today as well. Tomorrow, Greg Pickle will be on the show. Now, we have lined up here along the way Dennis Dodd of CBS, Lee Stout and Harry West, who co-wrote the book The Lair of the Lions, the story and history of Beaver Stadium. We have that coming up, too. And lots of games. Lots of games. So, if like, for example, the game with Campbell goes like four overtimes and it's like 7:30. What does the suit do?
That's a great question.
Besides pace.
And you'll do more than that.
So is it funny? It's a game of my life.
I would think he would probably just continue to broadcast the game in the studio like actually it was going out over the air live on 1070 AM.
Oh, we'll be done by 6:20.
I know you will. But you should text him that just for fun.
Well, you know, he's got a big day coming up tomorrow. Maddie's big autograph signing, things like that.
Okay. Wasn't aware of that.
Neither was he.
No.
They're going to have a press conference in Florida at 4:30 about this plane crash, okay? So just be aware. Just be aware.
Yeah, he was... When he was with the Phillies, he didn't do a lot of talking, not really big on the interviews, very short to the point. It's kind of ironic. A few weeks ago, he was on social media on his Twitter account. He goes, I'm really not big on posting pics of my stuff. Remember the MTV show Cribs? Remember Cribs? He goes, I'll never be on Cribs, when celebrities would let you into their posh houses. He says, yeah. But this A5 is so outrageous, I'd feel guilty not sharing pics. He was sharing photos of an A5.
Right, yeah, I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah,
I've seen it. So, find out at 4:30 if more details about it. I mean, it may be the basics, or they may have a lot more information. We'll see. Greg Pickle on the show tomorrow. We'll talk about football. And we'll talk about recruiting as well. I mean, keep in mind, the early signing period for college football is coming up December 20th. Now, the early signing period for college basketball is tomorrow, you know. Tomorrow is the early signing period for college basketball. And then the early signing period for college football is the 20th of December. So we'll talk with Greg Pickle about the football part of it coming up tomorrow. And I'm expecting Penn State basketball-wise, I think, to sign three tomorrow. And they open up on Friday. Then they play again on Sunday. So this is one of those three games in 3-day deal for me on the weekend. I mean... Suit, of course, has Shikellamy football on Friday and Bucknell football on Saturday with Georgetown Senior Day. It's great to have Joe Susan on the show yesterday. Then you're all going to gather at Maddie's tomorrow. Joe's going to be there. The players are going to be there. Is it possible that the suit just by presence overshadows?
That's true, because it has been some time since his last appearance there. Which, by the way, it is available and open to the public tomorrow. So stop out and see us, noon to 1, $10. Great lunch, your chance to win some great prizes, and see everybody there. It's always a great time. Doug will probably have some information, too, as to the next... those get information, too, and, you know, in regards to fan buses to future events, whether it be basketball or football.
Well, they got Monmouth on the road in basketball. Then they go to Fayetteville and take on Arkansas. Then they go to North Carolina. I said what I said to Nathan Davis yesterday. I said, what madman put that schedule together? Knowing that Nathan put it together. Coaches in basketball, a lot of input as to what's going on when it comes to scheduling. I think football coaches do too, but football coach scheduling is done so far out in advance, and you just don't know what you're going to get when you play it. I'll give you a good example. Wisconsin this year, not being helped by having BYU as their not big non-conference game. And when you schedule that game, your idea is that you've put a really good opponent on the schedule, right? It's BYU. And it turned out they've hit a rut. Now you're not really helped by having them there. So you just don't know because they're so far out. I always have used the Syracuse scheduling bit. When Penn State scheduled Syracuse to play football in the 2000s, Paul Pasqualoni was the coach. They had a couple of 10-win seasons, 10-2, right? Playing pretty well, doing well, getting some recognition for it and so forth. So Penn State schedules them. Well, when they play, there is no Paul Pasqualoni, and there is no competition. But when they schedule them, they were good. When they played them, they weren't. Remember that year was 2008. They had Arkansas State on the schedule. They had Syracuse at Syracuse. They had Arkansas State. They bought out Arkansas State. And then they paid, at that time, which was big money, $800,000 to get Mike Riley in Oregon State to come east and replace them because Joe knew they needed to have another quality non-conference opponent there to get themselves in the race. Because Joe knew he had a good team in 2008. I mean, they ended up winning the Big Ten Championship. But he knew he had a good team in 2008. So that's why, they bought out Arkansas State and they bought Oregon State to come in because they knew the Syracuse thing. When they scheduled it, it was fine. When they actually got around to actually playing the game, it wasn't. And that's the story with Wisconsin this year. When they scheduled BYU, that was pretty good scheduling. And now when it came out time to actually play it out, it's not. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment. Andrew Callahan, final half hour from 24/7 Sports. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, unfortunately, this is the stuff you don't want to do, but yes, it has been confirmed. Roy Halladay was killed today in a plane crash in the Gulf of Mexico. He was piloting the plane, evidently, at the time. It crashed into the Gulf of Mexico. He was just 40 years old. Leaves behind a wife, two children. Roy Halladay had put together a sterling major league career, 11 years with the Toronto Blue Jays, and from 2010 to 2013, he was the ace of a very good Phillies pitching staff that included Cliff Lee and Cole Hamels. He threw a perfect game against the Florida Marlins or the Miami Marlins. I guess they were the Florida Marlins at the time. They threw a no-hitter against the Reds in Game 1 of the postseason in 2010, only the second no-hitter ever to go along with the perfect game thrown by Don Larson in 1956. He loved planes. He was a guy that finally got his pilot's license. He bought this plane, and it crashed today, and he was killed. He was the only person evidently on board at the time, and just 40 years of age. When Penn State was going to play in the Outback Bowl in 2010, Penn State practiced in Clearwater at the Phillies facility. I think they were practicing to get ready to play Florida. And Roy Halladay was there doing extra work. And I'll never forget Joe Paterno telling me how impressed he was about the kind of guy Roy Halladay seemed to him. Just 40 years of age. Obviously a very, very sad day for Phillies fans. He was a quiet guy that was not one of those guys that did a lot of interviews. You know, he did what he had to do, but was not big on opening up about who he was and so forth. He just wanted to keep to the basics when dealing with the media. But the fans obviously loved him. They knew every time they got he got the ball, he was going to give them a great effort. Maybe it wouldn't be a winning effort that day or night, but they were going to get a great effort from him. Only 40 years of age. Way, way, way too soon. And it was an Icon A5 plane. And that was the model of the aircraft that was recovered today in the Gulf of Mexico. 8-time All-Star. 203-105 with a 3.38 ERA during his 16-year career with the Blue Jays and the Phillies. And, of course, in 2010 with the perfect game against the Marlins and the postseason no-hitter against the Cincinnati Reds. Just 40 years of age. Wife, 2 children.
If you go to his Twitter page, there's an avatar photo of him with the headset on in the cockpit. And it says, courage is not being fearless, but rather acting in the spite of the existence of fear.
Yeah, he just wanted to go out and take the plane out, have a good time today. And incredible shame. And for Phillies fans, obviously, tough one because obviously they loved how he pitched. They loved how he pitched. Real competitor, did not want to give up the ball. So he was one of those guys where, what was the story that Charlie Manuel would always hesitate to go out to take him out in the middle of an inning? Because Roy was not going to be in a good mood when Charlie showed up at the mound. Now, he didn't have to do that very often because Halliday was that good. And that was one of those real impact. When they got him, that was a huge impact trade when they got him from the Toronto Blue Jays. And he made it pay off. I mean, he made it pay off. And you think about how well he pitched for them. And finally in 2013, which is your 16th season in the league. You know, at that point, things start to, you know, physically and mechanically break down for you. So, the news you don't want to deliver, but you want to make sure that everybody's up to date on what's going on. Roy Halladay dying in a plane crash today at the age of 40. And your prayers go out to his wife and to his 2 children. I mean, his children can't be that old. And, you know, obviously as a pitcher, he made a lot of money in the course of his career. I'm sure they'd give it all back right now just to have him there. So, it's hard. That is hard. Tough story this afternoon. Now, we are going to shift gears a bit. We're going to go talk Penn State football with Andrew Callahan at 24/7 Sports. And he'll be joining us in the next half hour to get a breakdown from him on Penn State football, a lot of film work that he has done, and what he's been able to see in that film work. Because he does that a lot. He breaks down a lot of tape. Give everybody a sense of why something is or is not working. Andrew Callahan, 24/7 Sports, next half hour. Our condolences to the family of Roy Halladay, killed today in a plane crash in the Gulf of Mexico, leaving behind a wife and 2 children.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And again, repeating the news that we gave you about a half hour ago, that Roy Halladay did pass away today at the age of 40 in a plane crash in the Gulf of Mexico. It was his plane that he was piloting, and he leaves behind his wife, Brandy, and his two children. So, and the Phillies released a statement saying they are numb over the news, as probably all Philly fans are, and baseball fans and sports fans are numb over hearing the news of a 40-year-old losing his life so early in life. So his wife, Brandy, Braden, and Ryan, his sons, obviously our deepest condolences on the death of Roy Halladay, just 40 years old. All right, with that now, we'll transition to Penn State football. The Nittany Lions on Saturday are going to take on Rutgers at Beaver Stadium at homecoming after what was a rugged two-game road swing where they lost by a total of 4 points to Ohio State and Michigan State. Andrew Callahan, I've been wanting to get him on the show for a long time because he does a brilliant job of analysis and breaking down tape. Andrew, welcome to the show. It's our pleasure to have you with us.
Oh, no, the pleasure is all mine, Steve. Thank you for having me on.
All right, let's start with the running game, because I know you decided to do an in-depth analysis, which you do of everything, breaking down tape. What are you seeing in the running game? Are you seeing something schematically, or is it a question of not enough hat on hat?
Well, Penn State has been able to generate hats on hats for the last couple of weeks, but there are a couple factors coming into play that are bigger than that. And one, you've got to look at the offensive line, which is, you know, probably better than anyone else, Steve, is just littered with a couple of injuries in key spots and a lot of youth. On top of that, they faced five straight top 30 run defenses in the country when you look at some of the more advanced metrics and not just total yards. So that's going to be difficult than anybody. And then specific to their last two games against Ohio State and Michigan State, both of them structurally attempted to take out Penn State's inside zone, which is their base run. So they're looking to take away what Penn State does best, force them to kind of play left-handed, if you will. And again, with that line that's been hurt, it's still young and experienced, it's been difficult for Penn State to do so, and that's why you've seen Saquon Barkley be as limited as he has been.
So then that brings us to them attempting to get the job done by putting the ball in the air. What have you seen in Penn State's ability to find open zones?
Well, what they've done is just an outstanding job of carving up the coverages that they know Ohio State and Michigan State, you know, will play. You want to take it 1 week earlier against Michigan. You know, Michigan plays a lot of man-to-man, a lot of cover one, some certain pressures, and they took advantage of that. You saw with A'Shaun Hamilton's touchdown, just as you did when Indiana tried to play a lot of man a couple weeks earlier, which was known as a smash fade route. So you have a fade route from the inside receiver where Hamilton always plays. It works out quite well because he's got space. Now, against Ohio State and Michigan, they play a lot more zone coverage. So they changed out the route concepts, and then both teams still played cover one like Michigan did, and again, Penn State was able to make them pay for it. So they switched back and forth, and it's really, though, just a matter of giving McSorley time because we know, again, working with that offensive line, he hasn't had as much of it as he did earlier in the year.
All right. You mentioned the use of advanced metrics, and obviously, you know, to get ready for a broadcast, we sit down and we look at metrics, and, you know, you try not to throw 5,000 numbers into a broadcast, but if you see something in the pregame that you can use as a tip-off for fans, what are some things that interest you when you look at metrics?
You know, the thing with metrics to me is that I think it highlights, you know, what's really the most important part about college football, and it's taking any information we have and putting it into context, because we all know you've got upwards of 130 teams across the country of varying quality, and they all play different styles. So teams that play with more pace are going to run more plays. So naturally, their yard totals are going to be a lot higher. Teams that slow it down are not going to have as high yard totals like a Wisconsin, but that doesn't mean Wisconsin's not one of the better offenses in the country. They're just a different style. So these metrics account for that and say, okay, how well are you succeeding in situations that everyone faces them in? You know, what teams are doing best on first and 10? You know, what teams are doing better against competition? Again, you're Penn State. You don't want to punish them statistically, you know, because they play in a difficult division. So they say, okay, accounting for the defenses you played, how well have you done? So that's something that interests me, and I think provides a lot more info because, you know, they say statistics always lie. You know, it's never easier than in a sport with such a small sample of a season, just 12 games, and then again against competition with such great degrees of variance.
Do you like to look at metrics first and then watch a tape to see if it matches up, or do you do it in reverse?
No, I do like to give a look at the metric, and that kind of tells you, you know, what particular areas, whether it's passing situations, or perhaps it's in short yardage, you know, where teams succeed, and then you go out and find why they do it. Sometimes, you know, again, the case of an Ohio State or Michigan, it's just quite obvious. You know, those are the same programs that are hauling in top 10, top 15 recruiting classes, and then sometimes it's a schematic thing. So I think I like to, you know, find out what areas are their strengths or weaknesses first, which, you know, again, that those metrics take into account so much data, and then you go into the tape knowing what you're looking for as opposed to trying to take in everything all at once.
Then let's flip it to the other side of the ball. We've talked about Penn State's blitz. The opening seven games of the season, effective. The last two games, not as effective. Is this a question, when you look at the tape, of timing up a blitz? Is it a question maybe they're not scraping off of a blitz? And I'll explain scraping here for the fans for a second. Scraping is, for example, if you're an outside linebacker and the end comes off and you go right off, like there's 4 inches separation between you and the end, for example, if you're blitzing off the outside. That's called scraping, which then means that the tackle has to make a decision as to which one of you to take because you've made it so tight. Or is it a question now of them being just flat out picked up by other people because they're just blocking it better?
Well, I think, again, we look at Ohio State and Michigan State, their last two losses. You have one answer for their game against the Buckeyes was that Ryan Buchholz gets hurt in the first play from scrimmage, and then you've got a guy in Shakatone, a redshirt freshman, playing 44 snaps. You know, his previous high for the season on defense had been 26. So by the time the fourth quarter rolled around, you know, a guy who's normally so quick off the ball and he's got that burst, I mean, he was just exhausted. And the same went for Sharif Miller. You look at Sharif Miller, he's played 80% of all defensive snaps the last two weekends, which is unheard of with his defense that likes to rotate up front. Of course, they can't do that now with Buchholz out. Same with Torrence Brown. And on the other end against Michigan State, Penn State blitzed a ton at Lewerke but couldn't get home. On more than half their snaps, they're sending at least five guys at the quarterback. The issue was Michigan State did an outstanding job of picking up that blitz, because when you looked at how effective Penn State was pressuring Lewerke with the blitz versus the non-blitz, they got to him 30% of the time with a four-man rush, but just about 21% of the time when they brought the blitz. So again, you're devoting more resources to getting after him, but actually having less success, which means he not only has more time, but more space to operate and find open receivers.
You look at this football team, we talked about the injuries and so forth. How good do you think Penn State is, Andrew?
I think they're a top 10 team. You know, I think they have a smaller margin for error defensively. It's got to be a greater than the sum of their parts, because, you know, you look at a Marcus Allen, maybe a Jason Kabinda, but there aren't many great players, you know, players that are game wreckers if you're an opponent scouting. And obviously the offense, you know, has the potential to be the most explosive in the country. Special teams have been good, so they're well-rounded, but I wouldn't put them quite in the top five. Top 10 sounds more comfortable to me.
Right. All right. Now Rutgers coming up this week. What are a couple of things that stand out to you as this matchup comes up?
You know, I was just looking at the numbers. Again, we talked so much about numbers already, but I got a couple more for you. The last two games, Penn State's run for at least 330 yards against the Scarlet Knights, and that's just astounding. And I think it should be taken as an encouraging sign. The issue is Rutgers is not the same team as it has been the last two seasons. I mean, they've won three Big Ten games already. You know, again, per some more advanced metrics, the total yards might not look so great, but they're actually middle of the pack in terms of run defense. And it'll really be a test because, you know, Penn State, as we've seen, has struggled to run the ball on the ground. I think this is a Rutgers team that probably should get more credit than it currently is as a 31-point underdog. But offensively, I mean, they can't throw. So Penn State's defense, I think, will return to form against the Scarlet Knights. But, you know, Penn State might be a little bit slow out of the gates than we expect on Saturday.
Well, metrics are interesting because, I mean, they're just advanced stats. I can give you one basic stat, and that tells you a lot about how Rutgers wants to play. They've attempted 63 passes in the last four games. They've won three of four, but they only are averaging 16 pass attempts a game to get there.
Right. Yeah, they're going to try to keep that ball on the ground, you know, hold on to it as long as they can, which kind of shortens the game, gives your offense fewer possessions and has their defense out there. So, you know, they're aware of their limitations, and, you know, you just got to play that way when your passing situation is what it is for the Scarlet Knights.
And then going into, okay, here's the other big one, all right? Last year going into this matchup a season ago, Rutgers had given up 134 points in the opening quarter. This year they've given up just 34 points in the opening quarter, minus 100. In other words, they're not starting out the second quarter playing dramatically uphill.
Yeah, and again, you know, as we just talked about, for an offense that would rather do almost anything else but pass, I mean, that helps keep you in the game longer. It allows you to play to your strengths, and you're absolutely right. I mean, that first quarter has been so big for Penn State this season, but, you know, again, it has been for Rutgers, and it just does wonder for that team, which I should also mention, you know, they've been infused with transfers. I think James told us today that, you know, he views their top two players as both guys who originally enrolled in Miami. Now they're up in Piscataway. So they're more talented, and, you know, like you just said, they've been off to better starts as a result.
Yeah, Hester, obviously, on the defensive side. Edwards on the offensive side. They're both Miami transfers. What got you into tape study, and who opened the door for you to do it, and to do it properly?
Sure. Well, actually, to be honest, Steve, you know, up until about my junior year of college, I had wanted to be a coach. And during high school and that time in college, I had reached out to a number of folks. I grew up in Storrs, Connecticut, which is the main campus for UConn. You know, people who were on their staff and on my own really just took it up to find different playbooks or do some extra reading. I mean, you look at my bookshelf as a kid and you would think, you know, my dad might have been the head coach at UConn, but that was the first thing from the truth. It was just, you know, always fascinated by the idea of we're all watching the same game, but the people on the sidelines and the players obviously have such a greater understanding. And what are they able to see that the rest of us are not? And it's a skill, truthfully, anyone could pick up. It's just a matter of devoting, you know, enough time per day over the years, you know, as of course the coaches do because they're professionals in that regard, to understanding the game or techniques or schemes. And, you know, perhaps it helps to be a little bit crazy in that regard. You know, I'd admit, you know, it's not a hobby that everyone picks up, but for me, it's just the strategy is so intriguing. Then you get down into more of the finer coaching points, and you just see a little bit more. And to be honest, you know, now at this stage working in the media, it cuts down on half the questions I have to ask James on Tuesday because I've already watched the tape myself and found out what went right or what went wrong on the previous Saturday.
Right, no question. Then the use of advanced analytics, is it Pro Football Focus you like to go to, or is there a different outlet?
Well, Bill Connolly for SB Nation, which you actually used to write for, straight out of college, does a lot more the advanced metric work that I look at. I think Pro Football Focus does a great job. My only issue is, you know, when you look at their offensive line and secondary grades, I think it's a lot more difficult to tell because they're working typically off of the TV copy, at which point you can't see the entire secondary. And when you have a busted coverage, I mean, coaches will tell you, even Bill Belichick, like, if one assignment is wrong, it's very difficult to tell, you know, what the rest of the puzzle says when you've got that missing piece. And offensively, you know, again, unless you know the protection call and something goes right, you know, and there's the blitz still gets through or something goes wrong, you don't quite know whose responsibility it was. So for me, it's not fair to downgrade a particular player in that instance. But yeah, it's a lot more of the advanced metrics, again, from Bill Connolly, who does a great job for SB Nation, that I really kind of focus on.
When you look at Penn State on tape, are you seeing things, in your opinion, that are correctable?
Yes. You know, there's nothing at this stage, of course, you can do about talent or injuries, but, you know, in terms of their schemes are fine. It's just a matter of, you know, adjusting on the fly. I mean, they average 5.5 yards per carry in the second half against Michigan State, which might be surprising, again, considering how limited Barkley was. But they made a change there that was quite effective, and they're rolling out the same five. And I think also just for continuity purposes, I mean, Will Fries, Chaz Wright, even Ryan Bates haven't had a full season under their belt at their different positions, so I think they'll naturally grow. And with weaker competition the rest of the way, I think Penn State not only will correct things, but they'll just naturally progress and get better.
Andrew, it was an absolute pleasure. We've been wanting to get you on the show for a while and appreciate the time that you gave us today, and hopefully this will be the first of many times we get you on the show.
Oh, well, I would love that, Steve. I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow and then on Saturday.
Appreciate it. Andrew Callahan joining us from 24/7 Sports. He's a great read because he's established himself as somebody that you need to read. We'll come back with more in a moment and wrap it up. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday. And, of course, the tragic news today about Roy Halladay being killed in a plane crash in the Gulf of Mexico. He was flying the plane. And 40 years of age, 16 seasons, the vast majority, by the way, 12 of them with the Toronto Blue Jays. In fact, he signed a one-day contract to retire as a Toronto Blue Jay. But his years with the Philadelphia Phillies, he was, especially the first three, spectacular. He's behind a wife and two sons. Ah, too soon. Way too soon. So. So for Phillies fans, of course, that has to be for baseball fans, sports fans, but especially for Phillies fans, that has to be a tremendous shock. 63 complete games in his career?
I tell you, he didn't waste any time on the bump. Whenever Roy started, good chance he would always attempt to complete the game because he never wanted to leave and head for the dugout early and guaranteed that game was going to last under 2:30. Yeah. Sometimes it'd even be a very brisk 2:15.
No, he's, again, just a great, great major league pitcher.
And part of that amazing rotation the Phillies had as well with Cliff Lee and Roy Oswalt and Cole Hamels. I mean, that was a fearsome foursome there.
Right. They right now don't know where the plane was headed, and they don't. And here's the other part: they don't know yet if there actually were other, if there's any other passengers. They haven't said that. Phillies released a statement saying, "We are numb over the very tragic news about Roy Halladay's untimely death. There are no words to describe the sadness that the entire Phillies family is feeling over the loss of one of the most respected human beings to ever play the game. It is with the heaviest of hearts we pass along our condolences to Brandy," that's his wife, "Ryan, and Braden," his two sons. And Halladay, great pitcher. I mentioned the 63 complete games. There are teams that won't get 63 complete games in the next 10 years. And he did that during the course of his career. 203-105 in his career, 98 over 500, 3.38 ERA, 5 starts in the postseason. Never pitched in the World Series, but his 5 postseason starts, he was really good, 2.25 ERA. Just 40 years of age, Roy Halladay. Boy. I mean, there's a sting to it when it's somebody that you may not know, but, you know, you watch them so often, you think you know them. Yeah, it just makes you think about, obviously, making sure that you do what you can to live your life to the fullest. Just 40 years old. But, yeah, they did confirm. Told you the story about 45, 50 minutes ago. And then the confirmation came about 4:20. They did have a news conference today. They said the plane went down around noon off the coast of Florida. Sheriff's Office Marine Unit responded to the downed plane. They found Halladay's body. No survivors found. They could not confirm if there were any additional passengers on the plane, and they don't know where it was headed. He was an amateur pilot who often posted on social media about small planes. Icon Aircraft had posted a video with Halladay trying out a new plane. And obviously over the years, you think of Roberto Clemente on his relief mission to Puerto Rico on New Year's Eve 72. You think about Thurman Munson doing touch-and-go landings in Canton, Ohio in 79. Corey Lytle, plane he was piloting, hitting a building in New York City in 2006. It's very, very sad. Indeed, very sad. Our thanks to Neil Coulong, who joined us on the show today to talk about the Steelers and some NFL issues. Our thanks to Andrew Callahan from 24/7 Sports, who always gives great information. That's one we're going to have back over and over, I sense. Been wanting to get him on the show for a while. Greg Pickle's going to be on the show tomorrow. Then eventually we're going to get Dennis Dodd on the show from CBS Sports. We also are scheduled on Thursday. Well, we got a heavy schedule Thursday. But we're going to get Lee Stout and Harry West on, co-authors of the book Lair of the Lions, The Story of Beaver Stadium. Thursday, don't forget, will be our roundtable, which will just be Sealands Grove and Shikellamy. Zach Showers will be on. Kevin Hurl will be on, and we'll preview the game from both sides. How exciting is it to have a game like that in our own backyard with such great stakes between two great rivals?
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.